So all of us today are joining the call for our mastermind series. And this particular course is all about how to create your own mastermind, your own masterclass, or your own challenge. And I want to give some examples today. So I ran across some great examples, and so I want to share those. But first, I want to get to know a little bit about each of you on the call. Now, of course, I know Linda. And Linda, I'm going to jump in here and make you my co-host in case I get bumped off. You can let me back in. And Angela, welcome. We're glad that you're here today. And Angela is close to me in Central Ohio, Grove City. I'm in Canal Winchester. And Linda, you're in Pennsylvania, so not too far away from us. What's the major city that you're located closest to, Linda?
Just west of Pittsburgh.
Okay. So you're actually on the Ohio side of Pittsburgh. Okay.
Very close.
We had some great friends that lived in Pittsburgh, and they've just recently moved to the Cleveland area. So they're even closer, but we used to love to go over there and do the riverboat thing on the Monongahela River there. I love that point in Pittsburgh. Love it. Do you guys go there very often?
No.
Have you been there though? Have you been there to
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that is such a cool little area. So for those of you that are listening, if you want a day trip and you're in this part of the country,
Yeah.
Pittsburgh actually has a great waterfront right there, and
Yeah.
it's kind of a fun day trip, and they've got
I'll throw out one other thing. For anybody that hasn't experienced that, coming out of one of the tunnels toward the point at night is spectacular.
good to know. Good to know. Anyway, I love that area and we loved going over there, and now they're in the Cleveland area, so now I have to find some new stuff to do in Cleveland, but that's all good. So, tell us a little bit about your business so as we talk, I can actually identify and I know what Linda does, and so I'm going to get to know Angela a little better. But I can actually identify some of my examples and explain or show how they would work for you and for your business. And so for me, I'm going to go first. I am a passive income coach, and Linda and I have had this conversation. I'm really kind of thinking about changing up my title to passive income mentor because that's kind of my sweet spot. I really like to mentor folks more than, and don't get me wrong, I've got some coaching clients and I love them. And if you're listening, you're still my coaching client. I'm not going to stop doing that. I love it, but you can only do so many when you're coaching, when you're doing one-on-one coaching. And so that's one of the reasons that we're talking in this about having either a master class or a mastermind or a challenge, is because you can do a group of people and you don't have to be with just one-on-one, because there's only so much of you. And what happens is after a while, unless you love it, and I have a gal that just loves it. She's tried all these other things and she's come back to one-on-one coaching because that's her sweet spot. She loves it. And so what she's done, and you gals will get this, what she's done is she, since she loves it and that's her sweet spot, and that's what she's decided she wants to do, she's decided how many hours she wants to do it. And then she reverse engineered it and decided how much money she wanted to make annually. And then, she just did the math, and this is what her clients pay per hour to get her. And it's expensive. And but she's making a go of it because that's her sweet spot. And when you coach with her, you realize that that is her sweet spot, and you don't mind paying her fee because you're going to get tons of value from her during that hour or two that you are with her. So that's how she has created her business. So I want to tell you, you can create your business however you want it to look. It's up to you. The problem is oftentimes when we start down that path, we don't know how we want it to look. And it's okay for it to be messy in the front end. It's okay. It's okay. Because as you start down that path and you go, well, I think I want to do this. And then you go, didn't like that as much as I thought I would. Or I think I want to do this. And then you find the stuff that you really, really enjoy. And you do more of what you enjoy and less of what you don't enjoy. Because the first step in creating your business is to create it around you and your lifestyle. That's the first step. And a lot of folks get so caught up. And I was guilty early on in my younger years. You compare yourself with these other people and you see somebody and you think, oh, well, maybe I should be doing that. And then somebody else is so successful over here and you go, wow, maybe I should be doing that. And again, that's okay, because it's kind of like it's like the dating game. You're trying out these different options to see, because maybe you don't even really know what it is that you like. You know, you kind of know what path you want to go down, but you're not sure what that's going to look like. And so once you decide what it is that you love, or what your passion is, or what your topic is, and once you decide what that genius of you is that you're going to bring to your audience, now you have to decide, how do I want to bring it to them? And so now, again, I'm all about reverse engineering. So now you have to reverse engineer that. Because once you've settled on that passion, that topic, now you have to ask yourself, what is it that my audience needs to know about that topic? What are the problems that I'm going to solve for my audience? And so once you decide what problems you're going to solve, and again, there's a whole series of ways that you can do that. One of my favorite ways is to simply go to a search engine on the internet and pretend that you're your audience and search and see what comes up. And the first page that comes up, the way the internet algorithms work is the first page that comes up, that's how people are asking the question. That's how people are searching. So now you can look at those topics that come up and you can go, oh, that's what they want to know. And I use this example all the time. Linda's lips will move because I'm sure she's heard me say this. But when I searched about passive income, because I'm all about passive income, hardly anything came up. And I'm like, doesn't everybody want passive income? How come I'm not getting all of these huge hits about passive income? Oh, we've got Mason today. Let me bring him up here. Mason, he's coming. And so when we're talking, there's Mason. And so when we're talking about passive income, I realized that most of the folks were actually searching for how to work from home. And so I realized that I needed to go back to the drawing board, and all of my marketing material, I didn't necessarily need to take out the words passive income, but I needed to include the words work from home so that when somebody did the search, my stuff would come up. So that's kind of what I'm talking about. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Welcome, Mason.
I'm sorry. I must have been trying to connect through the wrong Zoom link or something. So I apologize, but I'm just serious. Like, okay, what's going on?
Nope. You're all good. You're all good.
She only has like 8 of them. So I don't know how you got messed up.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened, Mason.
Well, am I concerned with, and to be quite honest, I sent you a text saying, are you waiting late? Or am I on the wrong link? Thinking I could be on the wrong link. So yeah. Anyway, it's all good.
I see you now. Yeah. Anyway, I do want to say this morning, welcome to everybody, first of all. And I just pulled up my text messages and I've got like 20. So I got like, you know, like the squirrel. I'm like, what? What are all these messages? Let me turn that off. So anyway, we were talking about trying to decide what message we're bringing to our audience, and then how to find our audience, and then how to craft our message so that we're solving the problem that our audience has. And I was just describing how I was going to solve the problem on how to have passive income. And I found out that my audience was searching for working from home instead of passive income. And so I had to add that to my ad copy. So anyway, so that was kind of my aha moment. Today, now, Mason, do you have one more session?
Yeah, today was the last session. So
yeah, that's what I thought. And so when we get into this free meetup on Fridays, all about creating your mastermind, that sort of thing, we get to practice our own material. Each of us have taken a turn practicing someone else's material, just to learn how to facilitate an actual mastermind call. And now each of us have gone through and have presented our own material, and Mason has been presenting his, and Linda's going to be next up. And Linda, have you decided whether you're going to do a 1 day, a 3 day, a five, or when I say day, one session, three session, five session, have you decided yet how you want yours to look?
I
Because again,
haven't.
what I want you to do is I want you to take something that you're actually going to launch to practice it on us. So something you're actually going to do or build from, you
I
know.
would say let's plan for a five.
Okay. All right. I'm going to make a note. And so, Angela, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but what we're doing is, and you can go back and listen to some of the replay so you can see what has happened in the past. But you get to take a topic that you've decided is your passion that you want to pursue. Then you get to decide kind of who your audience is and what problem you're going to solve for them, and then how you might put together either a 1 day or a one session, a three session or five session, and then you get to actually practice it on us. Okay, so I'll let you think on that. So anyway, on session one, what I bring to the table is just a little insight. So on session one, I bring how to write out your framework and name what problem it is that you're solving. And then in session two, I talk about how to choose your platform. And we're all on Zoom, and we kind of all decided that we like Zoom because the audience is comfortable with Zoom as well. And then in session three, I talk about setting your prices and your VIP offers. And then in session four, how to create your landing page and do your invitation. And then finally in session five is following up and testing and measuring your results. And so if you're on Zoom, what I like to do about the follow-up and testing, what I like to do is number one, I like to create a registration. And inside the Zoom platform, you can create that registration. So when you advertise that link, it does a couple of things. It makes, number one, it makes everybody joining your call register. And you can, and here's a little heads up, there is a switch that you can click inside your settings that does not allow your attendees to change their name. And here's why that's important. Early on, I had a Zoom call that got hacked. And what happened was four or five, I'm sure they were college guys and it was a prank, I'm pretty sure. And they all decided to join the call. Then they would say something inappropriate. And when I would go in up in the corner, the three little buttons up in the corner, when you're the host or co-host, you can see the three little buttons. And when you click on those buttons, you can stop their video or you can delete them. There's all kinds of things you can do there. But they would change their name. And then I would try to find John, and there wouldn't be a John. So I'd go, okay, he left the call. Well, then George would say something inappropriate. Well, then I would go to find George, and he would, and then all of a sudden, Pete was the only one. And so anyway, it reminded me of the game where you've got the and you're trying to hit the mouse that keeps
Whack-a-mole.
whack-a-mole. Yeah. And I just kept trying to find this guy. And so then somebody said, Kathy, why don't you just make it where they can't change their name? And I'm like, I can do that. So I'm here to tell you, yeah, you can do that, and that'll prevent that from happening. So anyway, but once you have a registration, number one, it makes them register, and I make it where they cannot change their registration, they can't change their email. Now they can make a fake one. You know, there's little you can do about that because we all can make as many emails as we want. And we can name our email whatever we want. But anyway, once they're registered, if they did something that really was illegal or something along that line, you could, you know, trace down, you know, where that email came from. So they're not as likely, if they can't hide somewhere, they're not as likely to hack your call when you're putting it out there to the public. And so I have the registration. I make it where nobody can change their name or their emails or whatever once they join. And it gives you their email address. So now you can start creating your marketing list. See, and then you can put them, you know, over in your constant contact or where, whatever it is that you want to use. And you can start creating an actual list. Because I don't know about you, but when I'm connected, With a group. And here's why the five sessions is kind of important, is after you live with five sessions with a group of people, you really don't want it to end because you start to build those relationships. And so I like it when I get the emails later. Now, another whole conversation is don't blow up their inbox to where they unsubscribe just because you've sent them 10 emails a day. And they're like, stop, I can't chase that many emails. Because, you know, all of us are busy, we're all working, we're all doing other things. And the last thing we want to do is have to weed through, you know, all of these marketing emails where we're trying to get sold something. And so even in my emails, I limit mine to once a week. And I have only had one person unsubscribe since I started, one in like 4 years. And I say in my email, and for those of you that get it, you remember, I say in my email that, you know, if you get more than one on this day is because you're signed up in more than one program of mine, because I just send it out to everybody that's in the program. But I only send out my, I'll call it my newsletter. It's just a weekly reminder of all of my meetups, and I send it out every Sunday. And I don't then fill up everybody's inbox through the week when they're busy working. So that's just me, but you have to find out what works for you and your audience. But that's what works for me. But once you have that registration in your Zoom, you can go back and see how many of those folks actually tapped into the call. See, so you can test and measure that. How many signed up actually joined? So now you can go back and see where your weak link is when you're doing a masterclass, an ongoing masterclass. You can see where did I not get as many to sign up that I wanted? Is that the weak link was my initial landing page? Or did I do a great landing page and a ton of people signed up, but I didn't get the percentage I wanted to come over and actually join the call? Was that the weak link? And then once you see who joined the call, because you're on the call, so you'll know who all joined the call, then you can do a follow-up email with your VIP offers and how many click through on that. Maybe that is your weak link, but you have to test and measure your results so that you can firm up, you know, where you're lacking. Now, three of us on this call, we know Sherry. Sherry did a one-day masterclass, or no, she did a five-session masterclass, and she kind of lost everybody on session four. And then she had a hard time getting them back on session five because session four kind of fizzled for her. One was strong, two was strong, three was strong, four kind of fizzled. And then five was mediocre because it was the final one. And she did this questionnaire, this survey at the end. And she said, you know, what could I do better about my five sessions? And the feedback that she got was that they felt session four was too technical. And so she thought, oh, I have to now go back and rework. They said, we loved session one, two, and three, but when we got to four, it was a little over our heads. And so they lost interest because it was a little too technical for her audience. And so she has to do one of two things. She either has to get a smarter audience, or she has to bring her material down a little bit. And so, and again, she lives in this passion. And so that's what happens, is when you live inside your passion, you are ahead of your audience because it's what you love. And so you're absorbing new information all the time about your passion because it's your lane. It's what you're doing. And it all of a sudden it puts you way ahead of your audience. And sometimes you have to remind yourself of that you need to kind of bring it back to the basics again. And I did a little bit of that early on myself because, you know, I was kind of entrenched in the material. And my first couple of classes, everybody was like, this is good stuff, but we don't know how to, we get it up here, but we don't know how to implement it. And so I had to start over and go, okay, let me give you square one. Here's how you implement this. Anyway, before I turn it over to Mason, I do want to share my screen real quick and show you some examples because I just think these are lots of fun. First of all, go to my homepage. You can get there by KathyBinner.com or just Kathy Binner International Academy. And we are in this entrepreneur and solopreneur section. So when I click on that, you will see that's where you find the Build a Better Business. And that's also where you will find Create the Masterclass. And this is what we're in today. And we're in the free one today. And when you go inside the course, there is a section there on 12 steps to create and launch a one-day masterclass. If you've not done any at all, this is a perfect place to start. So I will mention that, and it goes down through all the steps, how to identify your expertise, how to know your audience, how to set a clear learning objective. So it gives you all of the material. Now, I found a gal this morning online, and this is her one-day masterclass. And she is talking about the three keys to creating an extraordinary life. And all it is, she has pre-recorded this. And this is a great way to collect. This is her freebie. This is her free offer. If you've gone through my course on creating a better business, which is kind of, you know, in the entrepreneur section with this one. One of the things we talk about is having a free offer so that folks can kind of get to know you before they start spending money. This is her freebie. And she did this one-day masterclass. She has recorded it. And as soon as you sign up, it pops you right into her video. It's pre-recorded. It's just her. And she just does this teaching for an hour. And that's her masterclass. And it's free. Okay. And when you go down here, she does have her little disclaimer. You know, our vision is to help you bring your biggest dream into reality, blah, 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 blah. We cannot guarantee you that you'll reach all those goals. It's up to you. So she does have her little disclaimer right there. I do recommend for all of us that are doing any kind of business that you do have some sort of a privacy policy and a terms of use and a little disclaimer. So look at some websites out there. You can adopt some of those and adjust them and make them your own, but see what other folks are doing. And so I actually copied this one because I'm going to kind of break it down and see if I can change it up and make it my own and add a disclaimer similar to this into the footer of now. When I go back to my homepage already has that. So when I come all the way, see if it's got my privacy policy, my terms of use, all of that. And my disclaimer is already kind of built in there through Teachable. You can see my link here is with Teachable, and they've kind of already done that for me. But if your website has not done that for you, make sure that you kind of, you know, check that out. And if you leave the site, she has a pop-up that says, wait, don't go yet. You're about to discover, blah, blah, blah. Keep watching. You know, so she does have a little pop-up there. And so you can X out of that to get back to her one day, or hers is actually a 1 hour masterclass. So that's just an example of how you can use a masterclass as a free offer. The second one I want to show you, this is Carrie Oberbrunner. He's like, have a book inside you. Here's the problem he's solving. The book blueprint is the perfect program for you. You want to write a book, but you don't know where to begin. How many people are like, oh yeah, that's me. I've always wanted to write a book. And this is his sales page. Now it's pretty long. It just takes you all the way down, all the stuff that you get. He's got a pretty long and all, you know, all the, you know, kudos on how wonderful this is. And he even breaks down what you get in all the modules. And so his sales page goes all through the modules. Now he has 11 modules. So I don't know how quickly you would get through his program, but this is all pre-recorded. Now, when it's pre-recorded, what I want to tell you, that is called evergreen. And here's where passive income comes in. If you pre-record something and you leave out the fact that we had COVID, because 20 years from now, people aren't going to be interested that we had COVID, you know, people are not as interested even today that, you know, we had COVID. So my point is when you're making it evergreen, you want to leave out something that dates your material when you're going to make an evergreen recording. And you can do like this first gal, you can make it just, you know, a one-time thing, or you can do like Carrie, and you can make it these 11 modules. And when you go through to get my book Blueprint today. Now, his is not a free offer. His is like a first or second base offer. If I click through on it, I bought this long, long time ago and actually have been through it. If I click on it, does it give me the price? See, here's all the value, blah, blah, blah. And again, his sales page. So all of it is worth $594. Then you get these bonuses. Now the bonuses, it's worth $818. And it normally sells for $297. But you can even get $100 off. So you're getting this whole thing for $197. So you see that by the time you go through his sales page and you see the volume of value that you're going to get, and then he spells it out here when you click through. See, so you're gonna join for just $197. He's got the little timer going. So now you're feeling like, oh my gosh, if how many times have you clicked on something and then later you couldn't find it? And you're like, oh, I kind of like that, but now I don't. Oh, well, I couldn't find it. So now this gives you that sense of urgency that, oh, for $197 and I get $818 worth of stuff, maybe I ought to do that. So you see where his sales page really kind of brings home everything that you're going to get from him. And what happens is, you know, a lot of us will, now I did the program. I actually clicked through, several years ago, and I actually wrote a book. I wrote like three or four eBooks just off of going through this training. So anyway, my point is that there's value, and that's what you're trying to bring. So you're trying to solve a problem for your audience, and what value can you bring? And so that just gives you an idea. Now, here's one more, and then we're going to get on with Mason. This little gal, she's using Linktree as her electronic business card. I use Linktree as well for my electronic business card. And she did a dinner mastermind. How fun is this? She did a dinner mastermind. Okay, now before I go on, how many of you have gotten a card in the mail from an attorney that said, and Linda, this is right up your alley, that said, oh, you should do some estate planning and I'm going to buy you a steak dinner to come and listen basically to me tell you what you need to know about estate planning. Has anybody gotten that postcard in the mail? Yeah. This gal took that idea and she did this dinner mastermind. So when you click on the dinner mastermind, this is her sales page. And so she did Beyond the Office series, and she called her dinner mastermind a purposeful pause. And it's an exclusive mastermind dinner for high achieving women who want to unhook from workaholism and reimagine their future. And she did it in two locations, one in Denver, one in San Diego, and just send me the details, just a simple sales page. That's her whole sales page. Whereas if Carrie's went on for days because he broke down all the modules, you know, she just said, send me the details. And what she does on send me the details, she contacts you because this dinner party that she was putting on, she only wanted like six women. And so what, as a matter of fact, here's a picture. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's five of them in the picture. She only wanted five or six women to be in this mastermind dinner. And so it was a high ticket because she only wanted a handful of folks, you know, but after she bought all their dinners, you know, she walked away with a few $1,000s because it was a real high ticket. So you get the point. You can make this whatever you want to make it, whatever works for you. So anyway, I'm going to stop sharing my screen right now. Is there any questions or comments about what I've shown you so far on what you can do? I wanted to give you three examples that were like totally different from each other so that you could see how other folks are doing their master classes or masterminds or challenges. So questions, comments? Yes, Angela, and you're on mute. There.
You said that... to give people a freebie and then they can get to learn you. And So would you want to put a timer on something like that then? Cause they don't know you yet.
No. And the gal that did the freebie did not have a timer on hers. The gal that just did the very first one that I showed you, she did not have a timer on hers. This one. Yeah. She just had, you know, the three keys to creating an extraordinary life. And she just on her, I don't know if I can, I don't, I didn't think I kept her actual sales page, but her sales page was, you know, click through, and it was very short and sweet, kind of like Malvina's on the last one. It was just a little half page sales page. And when you click through, you had to put in your email in order to click through. But as soon as you put in your email, the video popped right up. And so there was no time frame. There was no nothing. Yeah. And again, she's just collecting emails. And she made this video as evergreen. So it's very kind of neutral, no time slots are mentioned in it, no seasons, nothing that would, it makes it timeless. It makes it evergreen. And so she can just use this as a marketing tool.
Okay.
To collect emails.
Yeah. So it can be free as a marketing tool to gain people's email addresses.
Correct.
And the other two people that you showed us, they didn't have a freebie, right?
Correct. The second one I showed you, Carrie, his, the way he finally spelled it all out is for $197, you can get his entire book blueprint training for $197 when you finally got to the tail end. So his is going to be like a first level or mid-level offer. But then when you got over here to Malvina, hers is a high-end offer. So you see where once you, and that's why I wanted to show you three different levels. So it's wherever you create it is it. Now, you can use the same thing all three times, but you have to, if you're going to put a big high ticket on it, you're going to have to bring tons more value. So you could take the same topic, if you will, and you could do a little video and make it evergreen and make it your freebie. You could add a whole bunch of handouts and a workbook and all kinds of stuff to go with the topic and make it your mid-level offer. You could create a whole summit around it, in-person conference for a weekend, and make it a high-end offer. Same topic. You just have to add a ton more value to raise the price. Does that make sense? Okay, Mason, I am going to let, well, first of all, I told you about me and went right on into teaching. Linda, tell us what you do briefly, who you are, where you're at, what you do, and then we're going to go to Angela, and then we're going to go to Mason.
Okay, I'm Linda Thomas. I am the founder of the Legacy of Love Project. It is a group course where I help people create their perfect end-of-life plan, so they can be a blessing to their loved ones instead of a burden. And I also do workshops, and I'm creating a course aimed at digital creators to help them protect their online content from going poof if something would happen to them.
And Linda just did a masterclass on that, by the way. And have you done your testing and measuring? How did you have some nice response from that?
I've definitely done what I call an after action review. I've learned a lot from it. I have had some people express interest in being included with information when I launch my next group. So I took that as a wonderful plus.
Perfect. I like it. Perfect. Perfect. Angela, tell us about where you physically are and what it is that you're doing and what is your passion? What is your message? What is it you're bringing?
I'm here in Grove City, Ohio, which is close to Kathy. I am a greeting card maker, a homemade card maker, and I'm targeting women that are retired, lonely, and bored by teaching them how to make homemade greeting cards so they can feel connected with other like people. Feel not bored anymore because they're doing something, and organized because then they know that how to start this homemade greeting card stuff they want to do, which is a new hobby for these retired ladies.
And you can see behind Angela, she has all her equipment there. that makes that. And she's got all of her materials and all. And what did you call the ones on the door, the different punches?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So she's got everything right there. And I love that as her backdrop, because that is part of her message. So I love that that is behind her. So yes, thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. Mason, give the audience a brief overview of where you are, who you are, what you're doing, and then I'll let you go right ahead and launch into your session.
So I am actually outside of Columbus, Ohio, but I do work in Grove City on the weekends. So I'm near Angela. What we're doing is Mastermind is based on a book I've written. It started off 20 years ago as a journal, evolved into something more than that. So it became a book, which I have yet to publish, but this is a course that will go along with the book, covering the material in it. And the book is titled The Forest, Awaken to Your Path, Discern Your Journey. It literally was about a time when I woke up wondering, why am I here? We'll go over that in a moment. So,
Mason, thank you. One little bit of housekeeping, back to the Zoom code thing where, you know, Mason was trying to find the right Zoom code to get on. Starting in January, we were going to have the same Zoom code for everything. That's going to make a little messier for me, because if I have people that tap into the wrong program, I might have to sort that out at the beginning. Of course, they're welcome to stay and listen, but they might go, this isn't the one I wanted to, you know, if they happen to tap in on the wrong Monday. But anyway, it's going to be the same Zoom code. So it's going to make it easier for everybody to keep that in mind. You can save it in your calendar or somewhere, you know, where you can just click on it and it'll take you right into the call. So there's that. And we're going to kind of streamline, and some of our topics, we're going to kind of bring them together. And like today, not only did we talk about, you know, creating a mastermind, but then I referred back to our Build a Better Business. And so those two courses really kind of go together quite well. And they're both together in our entrepreneurial section of the academy, but we're going to be talking about both of those on a call. So that'll help everybody understand it a little better. Okay. So Mason, over to you. And I am going to make you a co-host so that you can share your screen, and we'll let you do your thing.
All right. So Angela, you've come in. Actually, this is the fifth session. Let me get to the proper one up here. Come on. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. There we go. Everybody see the slide?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is number 5 out of 5. Kathy, talk about things we're practicing to learn. This one would go a little deeper. I actually think I should have put this earlier on, but didn't realize that till after I've written it. And so next time I know for that. Just to bring everybody up to date. So literally 20 years ago, I was working in a steel mill, 100-hour weeks. And I was a walking zombie with all the bad things associated with zombies. And I remember one afternoon, I woke up and I literally wondered, how did I get here? I could tell you on my resume how I got here, but I didn't understand how I got there. In this case, there being not a good place. So I'm going to break this down. We broke down to 5 sessions to talk about some certain concepts. This is for someone who personally, I think a lot of us fall. How do we get here where we're at? And like I said, I don't mean on your resume, but I mean internally. How did we get here? I try to provide a relatable analogy because for some reason, for me, the forest, even though I'm not an outdoorsman, the forest and lessons of nature appeal to me. They relate to me. By breaking it down, I think it's more relatable and hopefully more people can connect. In the first session, we talked about just the idea of waking up, realizing, hey, what's going on around us? You know? What is happening to us, and that we are on a path. It's not just the words you heard in school, you know, and some of the dangers along this path that we've discovered throughout life. Learning about understanding you have a story. Doesn't matter what the story is, you have a story, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. You can learn from it. You can unlock your potential based on what your story is. understanding that you have something to share, if not with others, at least to yourself, you know, and that you have a lot more resources available to you than you realize. And sometimes resource, when I say that, I don't mean necessarily a website to call or what's in your bank. I'm talking about what's available to you within you, if you just let yourself recognize that. Honestly, let's talk about, you know, we all go through bad times in life. I don't care how, what you have, who you are, everyone goes through a dark section. And it doesn't have to be the same as the other guy. And just because it may not seem as bad as the other guy, the worst thing you've ever been through is still the worst thing you've ever been through. It doesn't matter what somebody else has done. Talked a little bit last time about who are you traveling with? Who are the people around you? The people you hang out with have a direct impact on your life. They really do. So this is the last section. We're going to talk about choices. As I went through this, understand, and I'm going to say a little more, this really is a lot about what I have gone through or am going through. It also delves into people I know, things they've gone through. So it's kind of a combination of all the above. I like to talk about things that maybe people don't want to normally talk about. I talk about things that guys don't want to talk about. I'm being very candid here, because as guys, depending on when you grew up, you're not supposed to talk about this stuff, period. I grew up, failure is not an option. Fear is not allowed. Vulnerability is not allowed. Saying I love you is not allowed. That's not allowed. You can't do that. And that's just a crock of crap. I've edited my language, Kathy. I said crap.
No, you're all good.
But we have to step back and look at where decisions come from. Okay. And I'll tell you, in 2017, I got scapegoated and let go of a job. And I was convinced that my family and I would be living under a bridge, destitute. Because if you don't have a job, that's what's going to happen. And I had that fear for years. I stayed in awful, awful jobs for years because I had that fear that if I did something different, if I took a chance, we would be homeless. That was a fear I had. Decisions I made were based on fear. That's why looking at this, when I stepped back and looked at things, what is your decision? What are your choices based on? Fear or courage? And we'll talk about that more in a moment. This one, I think, talk about, once again, learning from these practice sessions. I think I would have done this earlier on, because as I look at the topic, the concept, I think it goes a little deeper and I would like to have spread it out. But I'm going to ask questions. I recognize this is could be uncomfortable, so you do not have to answer. But I want to put the thought in your head. I like quotes. Mm-hmm. I think I call them power thoughts. I've always liked quotes because to me, it reminds me that someone else has been through what I'm going through. Someone a whole lot smarter than I am, and I'm not alone. Personally, I am learning a lot about Stoicism. Marcus Aurelius is a key figure in the world of Stoicism. He was one of the last, considered one of the five great Roman emperors, so a long time ago. And in his book, Meditations, one of the things he talks about, the impediment to action, advance actions, what stands in the way becomes the way. The obstacle is the way. Okay? Those things you put in front of you, those things, yeah, that you put in front of you, that you don't want to do, that you can't do, I talk with my hands, by the way, that you can't do, that's telling you something. Yeah, that really is. As I look at these things, for example, may your choice reflect your hopes, not your fears. I was guilty of that. And now I'm feel like I'm turning a point where they are reflecting my hopes and not my fears. Personal Responsibility, Jim Rohn, I love his stuff. These are things that I, for me, resonate. A failure doesn't mean you're unworthy. I don't know what kind of heresy that is. That's not what I was taught growing up. Nor does it preclude success in your next try. You know, these are just thoughts that I like to keep in mind. Once again, it makes me feel less alone sometimes. I can find my keyboard. So it's interesting. I went back. We're going to talk in a moment. I'm talking a little bit right now. And I thought, okay, I like to go back to basics. So I wanted to see what is fear. And I pulled up the Google search. Nothing special about that. And even though I knew this, it jumped out of me, an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief. Not the actuality. The belief. Da-da-da, something's dangerous to have. The belief. So is fear based on real or imagined? Two things I was wondering about, and we're going to talk. I'm going to ask you guys some questions in just a moment. I'll stop talking in a second. Is where does it come from? That's one question that I had to ask myself. The other thing we need to consider, is it yours, your fear, or another's? Many times, and we talked about this with groups, other people will have fears, either their own fears or fears for you. Don't take a chance. Don't do something different. Something bad will happen. We are hardwired. Change is bad. Change is dangerous. That's our caveman days. Because in the caveman days, if you did something different, something changed, that means you could die. People have fears, and sometimes they will cast their fears on you. Not maliciously at all. They're not. It's just, hey, this is their fear, so of course it should be your fear too. And that can cast a lot of weight on you. So here's the questions. And I'm going to ask, and once again, I'm going to share, like I said, I shared earlier, what am I afraid of? If you had asked me 7 years ago, I hated my job. I hated what was going on. I didn't like myself. But if I took a chance, we would be destitute and homeless. And I had nothing to base that on. I mean, I had good skill sets. The economy wasn't bad then. It was just me. It was a fear I had. I can't even tell you where I got that from. I didn't grow up like that. I've never experienced that. I don't think I personally know anybody who's gone through that. I just had that fear personally. You know? But it guided decades worth of decisions on me. It guided decades of lack of decision. Remember, no decision is a decision. If I hate this and don't do anything about it, I am making a decision to not do anything. So I'm going to ask, and like I said, this is why I would have done this earlier, to give people time to think for the following one. Does anybody want to talk about these kind of things? And if you're not comfortable, that's fine. As I wrote this, I realized, I'm getting close. Got to be careful. And Angela, you came in to like write the vulnerable one. So either welcome or I apologize. I don't know which.
Well, Mason, I'll share.
Okay.
Like you, I've stayed in jobs longer than I should have. And for me, looking back, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Looking back, I realized that 2 years too long is kind of my pattern. I have no idea why it takes me 2 years, but it's like I'll make a decision that, you know, I need to do something more, something different, something better, or some whatever. And it'll take me about 24 months to make the transition. So I don't know whether that's good or bad. But then when I finally get on the other end of it, you know, mostly, you know, changing jobs, then I'll look back and go, why didn't I do that sooner? This is so much better. What was my fear? What, you know, and I just kept hanging in there on a job that maybe I knew I let's say I got done before they did. And, but I hung in there for like 2 years. So I don't know what that 2 years means, but that's for me personally. And again, the fear was the financials, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I've got a mortgage. I've got a car payment. I've, you know, I'm a single mom. I've got this little girl I got to take care of. And so sometimes, like you said, not making a decision is making a decision. I would decide to stay because it was my comfortable spot. I already know the job. I'm going to get the paycheck that, you know, even though I'm not liking what I'm doing, it's okay because it's paying the bills. So that was probably, I would have to say, if I had to drill down to what the actual fear was, it was the financial fear, you know, that I wouldn't be able to pay the bills. Professionally, I told myself early on that I would never be a speaker on a stage. And I am going next Wednesday. I'm in front of an entire landlord association and I'm okay with it. But there was a time that would have brought tremendous sweaty palms and anxiety. And, you know, I mean, I would have had an actual physical reaction to the thought of me being up in front of a group. And so, again, I think there's some ways to overcome some of those fears. But I found, just like changing jobs and realizing that all was well, I think just doing it a few times and having a few of those under your belt, you realize it's not as scary as what you told yourself it was going to be on the front end. You realize that after you've done it a while, it's like, no big deal. I remember the first time I did a Zoom call, I was like, Oh my gosh, I gotta make sure that the light's just right and that the, you know, and that I've got this and I've got that. And now I'm like, oh, did I comb my hair this morning? I probably should do that before I go on. And again, because you just get comfortable once you do it. And it goes with anything that you're doing. I think it just takes some time to get some reps under your belt. And then you realize it's not as scary as what you thought it was. So that's my take.
My daughter is an actress and she's been on stage so many times. My daughter's 15 and she's been doing it since she was like 8 or 9. She can't understand why anybody would be afraid to speak in public. And I'm like, AC, you don't understand. That's one of the top 5 fears. And she looks at me like I'm nuts. I'm like, no, Macy, look it up. Most people are afraid to talk in front of others. So. I'm sorry, Linda, good morning.
Hi. Well, I'll just share something that is real fresh for me. I had fears and concerns and a lot of procrastination about holding my workshop because it was the first time I had ever done that kind of a live event. And the procrastination was real. The resistance was real. Because there were a bunch of moving parts. And if you listen to other people, some of them may have a very complicated process, which makes you all the more afraid to get into those weeds. And so I did a modified version without as many hoops to jump through. But it was still a lot for me to take on. But as Kathy said, you know, starting is the biggest thing. And then you just keep running. But it was a valuable lesson for me to not let fear and procrastination stand in my way. Just pick a date, commit, and do the thing. And it may not be perfect, and it won't be, and it might not be pretty. Fortunately, mine worked out very well, but it was a lot of effort pre, during, and post. But that also laid a groundwork for future events that I can basically use all of that work as an outline and a template for another event that I will do.
Yep, you have to start. Absolutely.
That's the hard part.
Congratulations on doing it.
Thank you.
I started to do one once and I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have enough background. So my professional fear is fear of failure. And I feel like I'm on this time limit. Well, because I am. My husband told me it's now or never. So, yeah, that fear of failure, not being able to succeed and doing what I felt like I was led to do.
Well, I'll jump in and just say you're in the right place, Angela, because you're also, I think, in the Build a Better Business program. And so that's where you're going to get the tools to do what it is that you need to do. So once you decide what you want to launch, you'll get the tools there to do it. So, yes.
It's funny you mentioned I was in high school ROTC. So for me, that was a long time ago. And I had a sergeant, Sergeant Estrada. And he had a saying to us as kids and didn't fully appreciate. He said, the only perfect person is the one who doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Just can't make any mistakes. And he said it, whatever. You know, it wasn't until years later and realized at least if I try something, I will learn something. And I didn't fully appreciate that at first. You know, I'm a writer. I consider myself a writer and I write kids' stories. And I look back at one of the very first stories I wrote, you know, for my son 30 years ago, compared to now. And that first one was awful. It was awful. Awful. But at least I did it. And then I kept practicing with it. I kept playing with it. And I'm realizing now, for me, the fear is mitigated if I recognize who and what I am and have fun with it. You know, and I'm a big believer in that is I'll have fun with it. I'm more than willing to share my mistakes. Not all of them, but many of them. I'll share them with you. Two reasons. One, people see it anyway. So if I say it first, you can't really make fun of me because I've already acknowledged it. I'm being honest. Two, it gives people permission to be the same. I was always the guy who would ask questions in class, and here's why. And I say this to people. I will always ask questions. It might be my question. It might be Kathy. Kathy may lean over and say, hey, did you really understand that? She's uncomfortable saying it. So I will ask the question. By doing this all the time, people don't really know, is it me confused or someone else? And they just don't worry about it. And that gives people permission to ask questions. When I substitute teach, I'll look at a class and I will tell them, I want you to ask questions because when you ask a question, there's probably two or three others who have the same question, but they're afraid to. So if you ask a question, you are helping someone else out. And this is how you get over your fears. How I've got our fears on things. So it works most of the time, not all the time. So, let's talk about what's next. Yes, Linda, I'm sorry.
I had two comments. Some of the things we've been saying about failure, there's a famous quote that I'll refer to, but not get exactly right. And the idea is failure is merely feedback. So you just take that and run with it to do the next version. And Angela, I was just going to say, if doing a workshop is something that you were thinking about doing, maybe Kathy can say which of our meetings. We did a little bit of a analysis of my recent workshop, some of the things that I did, what tools I used, what worked, what maybe, you know, left something to be desired. And it might at least be some food for thought for you.
Oh, definitely. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I think it was just this past Monday or so when we did the create a workshop here in this lane, but it was the free meetup. and it was the last free meetup. So if you click through on that free meetup, you'll see my discussion with Linda.
We did one right after my event too.
Oh, that's right. We did.
It was more in depth even.
Yeah. I'll look it up.
Okay. Thank you. But I like to add to that, when you think you're failing, I know I always use it as a educational thing instead of looking, that I did something awful. I tried it. It didn't work. I move on. And I sure been doing a lot of that.
But at least you did it. How many times, and this is rhetorical, so don't answer. How many times have we not done something because of that fear? And I'm finally learning that at least I'll try it. At least I'll do it. For my writing, I'll write and I put things out there. Some resonate, some don't. That just happens. Nobody's perfect all the time. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I wrote this kid story and I wanted some honest feedback. Where I live, my friends would not give me honest feedback. It is hard to sell someone, Mason, this sucks. No one wants to say that. Back when I was working at a steel mill. So I wanted feedback and some stories. So I put together five of them and I gave them to a bunch of steel mill workers who was going to be better feedback. And what was interesting to me was, I got good feedback and it taught me a lot, even things you don't recognize. For example, there was one story that I still like to this day, and everyone else I've shown it, no one else resonates with it. Oh, well, learning. You're just learning. And then I write differently because of it, but you're learning. And if they don't like it, that's fine. But here's what I found. Before I let someone tell me, hey, this stinks, I ask them, in what way? You can tell me whatever you want, And I've said this to Kathy. I've given her some stuff. I've asked her to look at stuff. I said, the only caveat is I'm giving you permission. I want you to tell me what you don't like and why. If I give you something, I don't care if you tell me it sucks. Just tell me why. I had a lady I worked with. I gave her one of my stories. She threw it right back at me. Said, Mason, this is awful. Why? I wrote it in different time periods. My verb tenses were all over the place. First, third, 15th, whatever. The verbs were awful. And I didn't recognize it. And Bridget said, I'm not reading this. Go back and fix it. Hey, no problem. She told me it sucked. And here's why. Your verbs. And I looked like, oh, geez. And I didn't even catch that. So if we're willing to recognize that, that helps a lot. So. Oh, I like those quotes, Linda, about.
Yeah. It's the first, I did it first to host the panelists because that was my settings. Then I did it to everyone. Yeah. But I just came across that one this week. It just seemed so relevant.
Perfect.
Yep.
Even though I can't type.
No, it's all good.
That's okay. That's why they meant spell check.
Sometimes I hit that enter button a little too quick.
I do that all the time on Zoom at work. So, real quick, and I like to do research, a little bit of research. Where does fear come from? We've talked about personally. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill is a very famous book, a very good read. I like the fact that he talks about he lists six different basic fears. But what I really got out of this is you can recognize fear as a state of mind. And then when I first read this, I misread it. You can replace fears with positive alternate thinking. When I first read that, I skipped over the word alternate. And it's not always enough to say, hey, get rid of your fears with positive thinking. Ooh, son. No, it's not what it says. Alternate thinking. And I liked that word. That one word really stuck out at me. And I mean, the basic fears, these are some basic fears people have. It's nothing special. Let me rephrase that. It's nothing, magical. but it's things that you can deal with. For example, in 17, yes, I lost a job and I was in fear of poverty. And I found out I'm overqualified. I hate that phrasing with a passion. And I lost my dad that year. And I had all those things going on, and I had to really work hard to change my thinking. And I would like to say it happened quickly. It is still evolving to this day, and it is 6 years later. Okay. But remember, fear is a belief, and we can work on what our beliefs are based on what you, other beliefs you have, what you read, what you listen to, who you listen to. This right here, courage is interesting for me, for a military guy, you know, and once again, pardon me, some of my phrases will sound sexist, but they are, as a guy, ooh, brave, courage, like that. It's the ability to do something that frightens you. Taking a risk frightens people. Taking a risk is dangerous. Taking a risk means you're changing. And we all know that change is bad. It must be bad because that's what our primordial, our whatever, our caveman brain says. These are things we have to work, struggle past. And then again, there's different kinds of courage. You know, for you, you have to decide what you want. But what I want to get to is the ways to show courage. I thought this was interesting. You know, hey, we face difficulties. Yeah, challenge status quo. That sounds nice. I'm going to stand up. You know, all those are nice. They sound good. But to me, and I'm just saying for me, ask for help. That to me, for me, was the hardest. Everyone is afraid of something. Asking for help is scary. It makes you vulnerable. It makes you weak. It makes you little. I'm waiting for you ladies to correct me on this. It's none of those. But that's not what we were taught growing up, was it? I mean, how can ask, and I'm going to put this question out there, if anyone wants to answer, how can asking for help be courageous?
Well, I think one for me is, and again, I'll be sexist on the other side of the coin from Mason when he's talking about making those comments. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think as for women, sometimes we are expected, when you say asking for help, it could be on a little bit different vein. I'll take a little different direction where, we're kind of expected to do a lot of things, take care of the kids, do the grocery shopping, take care of the house, take, you know, and then because of financials over the years and the economy and all those factors, you know, women started working and then, you know, on out jobs outside the home. And then from there, started getting promotions and had high powered positions and lots of stress and lots of obligations on the job. But it seems like, depending on your generation, that when you got home, you were still expected to do all the stuff that you always did, you know, before you started working that day job. And so you still had to do all the cleaning, all the laundry, all the kids stuff, all the, you know, get the kids back and forth. And even on YouTube today, oh my gosh, it's hysterical. There's a guy that does this bit on YouTube. And he says, the school called me and wanted to know something about my kids. He goes, they do know I'm the dad, right? He goes, why are they not calling the mom? He goes, how do I know, you know, what music class my daughter's supposed to be in? Because I don't have any idea. I'm the dad. So, and again, that's so stereotypical. And I apologize for any of our listeners, because there are guys that do step up to the plate. There are girls that do choose to stay home, and that's what they want to do. And I get all of that. But oftentimes I catch myself when I'm feeling overwhelmed not asking for help because I tell myself that this is my job. And why do I do that? You know, what am I afraid of for asking for help? What somebody will think that I'm not this superhuman person, which I'm not. But is that what is it that I'm afraid of? So I catch that thinking when I was actually working in corporate America. If I started to feel, and this might go back, Mason, to that fear of poverty, but when I would start to feel overwhelmed on the actual job, I would have a tendency to feel like I have to figure this out and I have to get this job done. Even if I have to take some work home with me, I don't dare ask for help. Or they will maybe think, oh, maybe she's not the person for this job. And so I'm not sure what the basic fear, when you talked about the basic fears on the slide right before this one and poverty, maybe that's where it comes in when I had that fear on the job. Because, you know, I'd have a tendency to feel like I had to get it done, you know, even if I realized I couldn't. I didn't want to ask for help.
I would think criticism.
Maybe.
But what you're describing there is, and I'm so glad you went that way, and we didn't rehearse this either, is you are human. You have limits. Doesn't matter who you are, mom, dad, uncle, anybody. Everybody has limits and everybody's human. And I think we're afraid to show we're human or show we're vulnerable, because being vulnerable in some area may come across as weak, which then someone with malicious agendas will take as less than or incompetent, when none of that is true. But yet, whoever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever the role is, everyone has a limit you get to and you have to stop and reset. And I think we're just now starting to talk about that stuff in society, but we've only scratched the surface, to be quite honest. And asking for help doesn't make you weak. It actually tells me how you are perceptive, you're recognizing it, and you're brave enough to say, you know what, I need some help here. And that is scary as all get out. So anyway.
Can I build on that?
Please.
Sure. So I agree with all of that. And yet, if we are, if we're leaders, and it can be leaders in a business organization where we are the boss, but we could also be leaders in a volunteer organization or whatever. If we think we have to have all the skills, let's be real, we don't. And there are things that we suck at that other people excel at. And I mean, whatever that mission is, the family, the corporation, the volunteer organization, that mission is going to be furthered by people operating in their zone of genius. So as you're saying, Mason, if we can be self-aware enough to realize that and let someone else step into the spotlight for a particular task that we don't even want to do, we would rather, you know, be run over than do that. You know, it's so much better. And often you're blessing the other person by allowing them to step up and do the thing to help you.
But you have to step out of your own way. You have to step out of your own ego to realize to do that, which once again contradicts so much of what we're taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that because everything that you guys have said and what Linda said, and I was always told to, sorry.
I like the song though.
Yeah.
I was raised and taught that you do lift other people up because I believe in what like the Bible says, and that he gives certain people gifts and they earn talents and that, and we're not perfect people. And if you realize that we're here together trying to get someplace and we need each other. Mm-hmm. So that's all excellent.
Yeah, excellent. Great point, Angela.
It is.
Definitely.
Let's see. Okay, so once again, research, leadership, just in general. Embracing risk, courage is risky, which we, once again, and I'll repeat myself on purpose. We all know risk means change. Change must be bad. That's how we're conditioned. We have to work past that. Another word is coming in today's vocabulary is being vulnerable. Vulnerable doesn't mean you're weak. It just means, you know, when you can recognize that, that becomes a source of strength. It's interesting what I have found with my writing, and I'm going to use examples. So I write a really good business report. Okay. I do. It's dry, factual, to the point. Boom. It is dry as the Sahara Desert and just as boring. So when my oldest son was born, I wanted to tell him stories, and I realized I couldn't. So I had to learn to, I was trying to learn to write. And what I found over the years is while I can write a business topic, I would rather write other stuff. And what I stumbled across is when I write an article, when I write something where I show some vulnerability, either mine or someone else's, but I show vulnerability, those are the ones people actually comment on. And I didn't expect that. I work shift work. Okay, so there's a day and night shift during the week, day and night shift on the weekend. And what I found that, we all write articles for our newsletter. And I enjoy writing more people-oriented stuff and show a little bit of vulnerability. And it's those articles that I actually have people commenting on that I would normally never see. Like if I'm week on weekend nights, I'll never see a person on weekday nights. Will never cross paths, but I will get comments sometimes because of showing the vulnerability. Because once again, you show other people it's okay. You know, and I'm glad that word is coming to our vocabulary. You know, it's okay. I wrote here examples. Fear and courage is, you know, to me, it's two sides of the same coin. I wish I had a graphic to show that. I was trying to find a graphic to show a coin both sides. I couldn't figure that one out. But it is. It is. And I was going to ask, we've done some examples, but that bottom line, what's the worst that can happen? I like that line. And here's why. Been with my wife since 1980. I met my wife in 1987. Okay. We met at a Halloween event. And in those days, that was my thinking, what's the worst that could happen? And I remember exactly, I asked her out because I figured, and this was my thinking, what's the worst that could happen? She could knee me, punch me, spit on me. That's the worst that could happen. Or she could say yes. That was literally my thought process. Sometimes what's the worst that can happen isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. In the big picture, you know. So anyway, thoughts on this? Like I said, embracing risk requires taking. What did I write here? Oops, sorry. I can't see the whole part of that quote. Taking intentional risk. That's it. My view is covering part of the words. Courage requires taking intentional risk. What do you guys think about that, ladies? I mean, in terms of intentional risks. Any thoughts on that?
I had a comment on the worst that can happen piece. I don't know if all of you are familiar with a man named Tim Ferriss, very, very famous podcaster. He has a famous TED Talk about fear setting that is really worth checking out. And he actually does it as an exercise multiple times per year. And it helps keep his like head and heart kind of screwed on, you know, but it also helps him identify things that he might need to take action on so that the worst doesn't happen. But super, like one on the short list of famous TED Talks, this is one of them.
Nice.
Yes, we'll check it out.
Please, Angela.
Yeah, I just wrote it down because I definitely want to read that or hear it.
Yeah. But,
and as far as like intentional, what the worst can happen, I also try to think, is all of this really going to matter in a few years anyways? Is it going to make a difference now? So that's what I think too.
It puts it into perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It does.
I use this formula a lot in the real estate lane because I have some newbie investors and they're afraid to, as they say, pull the trigger and buy that first investment property. And again, out of fear, and most of it is financial fear. And so we actually sit down and we talk about, and this was my strategy when I started, is if this doesn't work out the way I'm hoping, you know, what is my out? What is my out clause for myself? You know, so the first thing that I have to ask myself is, what's the worst that could happen? You know, what's my worst case scenario if I buy this property and I can't get it rehabbed, or my contractor walks off the job, or once I get it done, I can't get it rented, or once I get it rented, people don't want to pay me that level of rent that I think I have to have to. What's the worst that's going to happen? What's my worst case scenario? What's my out clause? How do I get out from under this? And once I solve that, and I do take a moment to solve that, once I solve my out clause, it takes away all that fear. Now I'm ready to go forward because I already have a plan if it doesn't work. And so I use that formula a lot in my real estate lane.
That's good. It's, to me, over the years, I've realized, and once again, I stumbled into this. I would love to say I pre-planned it, stumbled in what's the worst that could happen, you know? And
she said, yes.
Yeah. I'll tell you, she gave me her number because I had nothing to write it down with. She figured I would forget it. And the next day I figured I'd calling it Joe's Bar and Grill. So, and please don't misunderstand. This is not like I thought I had game or anything in those days. I didn't. I just figured, what the heck? So, but it's like, what's the worst that could happen? And, you know, and on a lot of things, like, for example, if you had asked me in 17 or in 16, if I didn't have a job, I was just homeless and destitute with the family. That's not what happened. It forced me to learn more and to realize and change things. You know, I have some health issues with my hips and like that. 6 months ago, if you'd said, hey, Mason, you're going to walk 3 to 4 times a week, 30 minutes a day, and work out the gym, I would have explained to you, I would have bet you money how much pain I'd be in. Guess what? I'm walking 3 to 4 times a week, going to the gym 2 to 3 times a week, and I'm not in pain. I'm not. I'm in muscular stretching pain, you know, but not the hip and socket pain. But 6 months ago, I would have swore to you, I would insist, I would have pounded on the table. It didn't happen. You know? So you just don't know until you take that chance. You know? Where are we at? This is a favorite quote of mine. Once again, you know, Mark Twain, pretty creative guy. And I love this line because some of which actually happened, you know, some of which actually happened. How much do we imagine? You know, how much do we imagine? You know, I could have tied this up. Now look at this. I could have tied this with a Shakespeare quote. Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so.
Mm-hmm.
Think. That's not Hamlet. I forget which one it is. That's not important. Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so. It's a thinking part. So, and I think I'm about done.
That one quote about, I don't know who said this, whether you think you can or you think you mm-hmm. can't, that's what you are.
Henry Ford.
Okay.
Actually, it comes from Confucius. A man who says he can and a man who says he can't are usually both right. And I actually had to look that one up because Ford said it also. But before that, the original was from Confucius, an actual for real Confucius quote. So I was surprised by that. So actually, when I get done, we're going to ask for emails. And I'm going to send out two things that to me are relevant. The whole purpose of this mastermind was realizing we're on a path and trying to figure out where we want to take it. It's all about learning or recognizing that scenario. You know? And the two big parts in there, there's a poem that I really like called Our Greatest Fear, and then The Road Not Taken. And I'll send you guys copies of those. The poem Our Greatest Fear, and I'll read, in fact, I have it right there. I have a bulletin board right here behind this, and it's right there on my left-hand side. And the first line, first section says, it's our light. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. So it goes on. So I will send those out. And then a couple of also thoughts to ponder on this. So, and once again, and final thought for this overall series. People may tell you this and that, but the only person you're destined to become is the person you decide to be. And you can make that decision every day. So that is the end of number five for this.
Yeah, I can see the other ones by looking at the recordings.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this has been great, Mason. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really made me stop and think, and I say all the time that going on this journey is all about who you're becoming more than about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. It is.
True.
Yeah, that was great.
Yep. Thank you. I love it.
Your graphics.
What we have, Angela, is like Kathy's passion is passive income. It's just all different kinds of lanes. And then Linda's Legacy of Love project, which is pretty darn cool, things I didn't think about.
Yeah.
Especially on the virtual assets. Me, I'm still trying to decide, I'll be honest. But my bigger passion is just trying to communicate or connect or write a better story. Mm-hmm. And that's where I want to go. I still don't know what format I want to take, you know. My book, I have put it on hold again intentionally because I'm choosing something else right now. The reason I say this is whatever it is you want to do, doesn't matter. You know, you mentioned greeting cards. Cool. You know, because there's all kinds of places you could take that. Whatever you want to do, just start pursuing it. And when you realize you make a mistake, that means you've learned something different. That took me a long time to be able to admit that to myself.
Well, but here is even a bigger picture, is that action comes first and clarity comes second. And oftentimes we want to sit back and get clarity before we take action. And you have to take some action first, and then the clarity will come second. And so start with what you have, start with what you're thinking, start with, you know, what's around you, and it'll become more clear, you know, where you want to go. So I started, perfect example, I started and I launched all these lanes, And I realized that some of the lanes were overlapping to enough of an extent that now in January of 2024, I have more clarity, and I am now going to merge a couple of the lanes together because they actually work better together than they do separate. And but again, I didn't know that because I didn't know my audience well enough, see? And I knew that I didn't know my audience well enough. So I thought, well, I'm going to put it out there and I'm going to see what resonates, that whole testing and measuring thing. And some of my lanes are just way ahead of others. And those are the lanes that resonate more with my audience. And so now I have more clarity. But you can't get that any other way. You just have to launch and then test and measure and see what resonates with your audience. It's like Mason, when he started writing and became a little more vulnerable, he's resonating with his audience more. So now he has more clarity. He knows now to add more of that in his writing. See, that's given him more clarity. And if he would have never written anything, he would have never known that.
Right.
So it starts with action first and clarity second. So with that said, we are not going to be here next month because the fourth Friday in November is, of course, a holiday weekend because we've got Thanksgiving there through that time. And then when you get into December, it's Christmas weekend. It's the Friday before Christmas. So so we won't be here then. So we're going to skip November and December. So mark your calendars that we're skipping November, December. If you're keeping a separate calendar, mark your calendars. If you're just tapping into my calendar, it will be correct. Everything will be correct on my calendar. And so if you don't want to try to keep track of everything, just copy my link. Again, you can go to my linktree.com/Kathy Benner. And my calendar tab is right there, just a few tabs down on my link tree. So you can always tap through and get the details. The Academy is going to start to look a little bit different because, again, we're going to merge a couple of lanes, but I don't want to erase all of those original recordings. We've got all the replays. So I'm going to leave up through 2023 just the way it is, and I'll create a whole new icon to put into the Academy starting in January of 2024. Okay, so that way you can go back and listen to any of those replays. And Angela, you can click through in the Academy. And when you go to this particular lane, which is how to create a masterclass mastermind, there's the free one. And then there is the mastermind one. And you'll see that the conversation I had with Linda, I put with Linda Thomas. So you'll be able to find those if you want to go back and listen to those.
Yes, and, I would. Yes.
Yeah. And then you can even go back in the free one and you can click through and listen to Mason's entire 5 weeks if you want to. It's all right there, the replays to his mastermind. Yeah. And then starting in January, Linda gets to stretch her wings a little bit on her topic. And again, we're going to go on. Now, Mason, I know you work on the weekends. How does Monday at noon is your sleep time? Are you like totally out of this?
I can try. If it's once a month, I can suck it up for an hour. I may be kind of groggy when I come in here and I'll have my screen on the capture because I'll be like, but I'll make it.
Because you will have just worked all night, right?
Yes. You realize I just did that and we're being recorded.
That's okay. Uh-huh. All good. It's all good. We're being real. This is
I am.
We're getting you to practice your authenticity there, Mason. It's all good. Yeah.
So on Mondays, I typically, because I'll take my daughter to school, I take her to school every day. So I will have crawled into bed probably about 8:30-ish, 9-ish.
Ah.
So that'll give me about, 2.5 hours, 3 hours?
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Yeah, that's hard.
I could try and suck it up because I don't usually sleep much later anyway. I will try and start putting that on my calendar and push that.
Now, are you off Monday night then? So you're trying to not sleep a full sleep pattern or else you won't sleep Monday night. You're trying to get acclimated back over to, it's tough when you work nights a couple of days a week.
I never change my schedule. So I don't change my sleep schedule. So like today, I got up this morning, and I will be up until tomorrow morning. Today is my 24-hour day. I'll take a nap tomorrow. I'll take a nap on Sunday. I'll take a nap on Monday. I don't change my schedule. So it's, you know, some people change so they stay nighttime all week long. I'm a nighttime sleeper. Just for a couple of days, I pretend I have insomnia. So,
that's Wow.
It's not as hard. Once I get into it, it's a little more challenging. On weekends, I have to go into the office because there's an hour drive. Thank you, Grove City, Angela. so, but that's okay. I'll make it work out. I'll figure it out.
What do you do?
Walmart has a transportation command center there in Grove City where their distribution center is.
Yeah.
We deal with all logistics east of the Mississippi. So, like right now, my area just switched. So now I'm responsible for, we have a couple of facilities up in New York. So I will handle things up there between dispatching trucks, getting things ready, getting trucks prepared. I work with Virginia. I was working with Lewiston and Raymond up to a couple weeks ago. So this stuff over the weekend, I'm like, I spoke to those folks and I'm concerned to make sure nobody, you know, we'll see when I get back into work tonight. But yeah, so that's what we do is, and I may touch anywhere up and down the Eastern Seaboard. You know, just making sure things get to where they belong, working with vendors, making sure trucks are prepared properly. You know, all the stores send in their orders, and then I've got to make sure that all these stores are grouped together on trucks to go to the right place at the right time. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell.
Gosh, you don't know things exist till you ask.
And the thing is, the distribution center there is huge. Our little building is tiny. Like in the parking lot, it's tiny. And you would not know what that is or what we do from the look. It's, you know.
Interesting. That is interesting. Well, Mason, you're driving almost right past me in Canal Winchester, so we're going to have to meet up and do lunch or something on some of your travels, whatever works for your schedule. I'm trying to not disrupt your sleep as much as possible. I'm trying to fit into your lifestyle as much as I can.
Someone's got to be a challenge. It might as well be me.
No, I get it. I worked nights for years. I did audits for hotels, and I went in at 11 o'clock p.m. and worked until 7 a.m. And I did that for 20 years. Yeah.
Thing is, I wouldn't change this. I've been doing a schedule now for coming up on 5 years. I wouldn't change it because I'm done Monday morning. So I take my daughter to school 5 days a week. I can pick her up 5 days a week. And during the week, I can do whatever I want to do, whether it's writing, whether it's this, whether it's substitute teaching, you know, whatever I want to do. So, yeah, I enjoy this schedule. It was new to me 5 years ago, but I enjoy the schedule.
Yep, I love it. Yep, I get it. Thank you so much, everybody. Angela, it's so great to actually see you on the call. And Linda, thank you as always. Mason, that was an amazing 5 weeks. I loved it. I learned more about me. And again, it reminded me of a lot of things that I need to go back and rethink on. I am doing a practice right now, and it's called a practice, where I'm practicing raising my vibration energy. And I don't do as well every day as I should or as I could, but again, it's a practice. I'm practicing. So I'll get better.
When we stop recording, don't disconnect because I want to talk to you about something. So
okay. So anyway, thank you, everybody. I love it. I'm just going to go ahead and stop our recording now and catch us on the replay.